My heart has no words. My eyes have no tears left. Mind had done gone crazy. Went off and married my fears. Now I'm standing here with nothing left to tell you. I'm standing here with nothing to prove. I got nothing.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Mormon Expression Voices. This is Heather, as usual, and today I am talking to Kristen and Tom about their exodus from the church. So let's go ahead and welcome them and get started. Hello, guys.
Hey.
Okay, so who should we start with? Tom? Should we start with your childhood?
Sure, why not? I was basically raised like the poster child of LDS religion. Very, very good memories, actually, of family life. Was raised with conservative views and perspectives. We did the family home evening, but it was, I think I can just think of one family home evening, and it was like, how do I explain it? We did the scripture study. I think we sang a song, we said a prayer, and then we played board games, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one family meeting I can think of that we did.
That you ever had.
Yeah. And then we usually did family scripture study. That definitely happened often, but it was more like we would read. We experimented with different ways of doing it just as we grew older. We didn't want to just do one verse each. We started doing three verses each. And, you know, we played with two verses versus three verses versus four verses. That was fun. And that really was how it was. And then occasionally one of us would ask a question, but then it would be a lecture from my father. And that still reigns true even now with my dad. He's the lecturer. And
so there wasn't a lot of discussion during scripture study. It was
really
just like barrel through it.
It was just we read, you know. And just do one after the other. And, you know, if we had questions, my father was right. My father was, you know, the preacher, basically. And I don't really resent him exactly for that. It was just that I don't think that's what any of us were wanting from him. We actually wanted to discuss when we were reading.
Right, but he was fully in that he's the steward or the leader of the house.
Very much so. Okay. His favorite apostles were like McConkie, Perry. He just loved that Baptist preacher feeling.
Okay.
And he definitely felt like he needed to fulfill that kind of status.
So how did you feel about the church as a kid?
It was definitely good. It was the way of, you know, the way of life. It was my guide.
Was it just like the sea you were swimming in? It didn't really have. It was just what life was.
Yeah, the phrase ignorance is bliss applies a little bit, but it's not fully like that. I didn't feel like I was ignorant. I mm-hmm. felt like I could ask any question and get an answer, and the answer made sense considering the information I had.
Okay.
You know, yeah, it was life. It was good.
How about your teenage years?
My teenage years were fun in many different ways. I definitely immersed myself more as I grew up. I read For the Strength of Youth pamphlet, and I didn't really agree with some of what it said, with like music and movies, choosing friends. And particularly with one part about choosing friends, it says choose friends with your same values and standards and such.
Mm-hmm.
In the place where I lived, I could easily interpret that as people who were LDS, and just people who were LDS. And I didn't really see how that worked, considering that many of my friends were not LDS, and they were good people, critical thinkers. They were interesting. They were fun. You know, I just developed friendships with them, and it was good. Hence, I chose to just throw most of that pamphlet out the window, basically, probably even all of it, and studied the scriptures, went to church, and just started developing my own personal philosophies about individuality and different things. Oh, and let's not forget my sisters with their music. Beastie Boys, R.E.M., Snapcase. My mom actually found a CD called Damnation. from a group called Damnation, and she didn't even hear the music. She just saw that it had the word damn in the name of the band, and that was just not good in her eyes. But my mom actually was the parent who expressed her opinions and definitely encouraged what she thought was the right way of doing things, but let us choose for ourselves.
So she didn't take it away, she just expressed...
She just expressed dislike. And my father was the guy who would go into my sister's rooms and tear posters off the wall, grab tapes and CDs out of their collection, and just put all of it in the trash. Would go into their room.
Not in my house. This
exactly.
Is out of here.
Exactly.
Okay, so talk to me a little bit more about the For Strength of Youth conflict with your friends. Were you perceiving that your friends didn't measure up to the whole have friends of good standards because of the music they listened to? Were they watching movies? Were they doing drugs? How did they not fit into picked friends that have good morals like you're supposed to have?
Some of my friends, they smoked. They smoked weed and cigarettes. Drank alcohol. All that.
So you had enough of your own integrity to understand that you can be friends with people without having to behave like them.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, ironically too, it just... I didn't really see how being friends with these people was a problem. I mean, they developed my intellectuality, I believe, and they were just interesting.
All the way through high school, you are associating with kind of the rebel kids, but you've developed your own testimony? Do you think you had a testimony at that point?
I had a testimony about the culture, mm-hmm. about the health benefits, the social benefits of, you know, having that connection, but I loved those stories of Jesus going to diverse places and associating with diverse people, and I felt like, well, that means I should make friends with every person I can, and who cares about their affiliation and such, and I definitely believed the Joseph Smith story, the Book of Mormon, you know, all that. I definitely believed all of it to be, like, you know, the word and all that.
Were you on track for a mission?
Yes. Yes.
Never resented that or kind of dreaded it coming or anything like that?
A little bit, but it was more like just knowing that I would be sacrificing music, movies, just those
generic
concerns.
Having to get up at 6 a.m. every day.
Exactly.
And do all that walking.
Exactly. The night previous, actually, to going to the MTC, in my room, I knelt down on my bed and I prayed to God and said, I want to have testimony that experience, but I don't know why this experience was in my mind, but the Moroni visiting Joseph Smith in his room with all his brothers and sisters, I was like, I need to know that actually happened and true and da-da-da, and I never got an answer, yes or no. It's like, well, I feel good when I read the book, I feel good when I go to church, the culture's good, you know, da-da-da-da, you know, all that. Yeah, we're doing it.
God doesn't have to tell me what I already know.
Exactly, exactly.
So how far, or how soon before going out on your mission did you go to the temple? Was it months before you entered the MTC, or right before?
Basically right before, I think, actually.
And how was that, going to the temple?
Right before. And it was good. It actually was good. I viewed it as, it was spiritual, and, I mean, all the white and just being able to actually be in that building. Like, since I was a kid, I was raised, you know, with, you can't go in there till you're ready. And I was like, oh boy, I'll be ready to go in there. And, and when I actually go in there, I'm like, oh wow, I'm here, and this is all secret, and I can't talk about this. Wow, this is cool. And, you know, all that.
Okay, so where did you go on your mission?
Minnesota area.
Tell me about your mission. How did your mission go for you? Did you enjoy it?
The best 2 years and worst 2 years of my life definitely apply. Although now my best years of life are with my wife, but...
Yay! But up to that point.
Up to that point, those were the best and worst 2 years of my life. I mean, I had the companions which were just idiots and jerks. You know, met some very interesting people, some very interesting characters, learned more about them, about the history and about the religion, about the scriptures, about people's perception of the religion.
Did you have any faith struggles while you were on your mission, or did your faith change at all, or do you think you stayed in that kind of young, idealistic, naive faith the whole time?
I felt some moments of, how do I explain it? Multiple tracting moments of when I would knock on a person's door and they would say, well, I bet if you were raised Catholic, you'd be Catholic, or if you were raised this way. And that made me and my companion definitely, it was a game more than anything, really, but we just played with how, you know, what we think we'd be like if we were not religious in any way. And then if we were this religion, if we were... And, yeah, that definitely made me think about that. But I really think I just grasped onto, well, if I was not religious, I would probably be drinking beer and...
doing drugs and for abortions.
Probably, yeah. I did that cliche thing, actually, a little bit. Not like, full onto the drugs or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Probably just drinking alcohol. Watching R-rated movies. Sex. I imagine myself as being responsible about it, but I didn't really know what that really actually entailed, mm-hmm. which is just hilarious.
But still, raised in the Mormon paradigm, you see that as like a sinful lifestyle.
Exactly. Yeah. I definitely viewed it that way.
Are there any specific stories about your mission you'd like to tell before we move past that?
I was actually this close to being sent home once.
And what caused that?
An emotional relationship with a girl.
So you met a female in your mission?
Yes.
Member?
She was a member, yes. She was...
Some girl on a ward.
She was a convert, and she and her sister actually caused some problems between me and the different missionary, too, and I was that close to being sent home, and simultaneously that close to actually switching my mission to a Spanish-speaking mission. The mission person actually said I was seriously considering making you a Spanish-speaking missionary, considering your experience with that, but this little
transgression... You were no longer on the good list, so they couldn't consider you for something like that.
Exactly, and I was like, don't send me home, you know, I was...
Did they transfer you?
They just transferred me. I'm happy about it, actually, now. Very pretty area. I definitely needed a change of scenery. But one lady in that area in Preston, Minnesota, actually, she was so infatuated with me and my companion that during a dinner with the branch president of that area, actually asked if she could date one of us. And we're like, no, it's not allowed. She's like, I'll wait. When can you date?
So, John, I'll date you.
Yeah. I was actually in my first area, actually. I was propositioned for marriage by one of the local girls there in the branch.
You know, that's not something I've ever really asked about during interviews, but I wonder how often that happens.
It happens.
Younger, it happens very often. The young 19, 20-year-old girls see these cute boys in their ward, and,
Oh, man, and your hormones are raging. I mean, both sides. I felt like I needed to put some chains around my wrists occasionally just to stop myself from grabbing one of them and...
Making out,
you know? I mean, this is slightly personal and probably explicit, but masturbation was actually a problem in my mission.
You know, I recently listened to a Mormon Stories interview with some sort of life coach who tries to help men with, quote, porn problems. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about how he's been contacted by several... Maybe not several, I can't remember exactly how he said it, but basically mission presidents would come to him asking for help with, we've got a serious masturbation problem in our mission. And I'm thinking, no, you have normal 19-year-old boys in your mission.
Well, and they can't hug girls, they can shake hands, like, what do you want
even
these
just
poor
to
guys
visit girls,
to do?
Just to visit a single female, even a member female in an apartment or in a home, you actually need a third guy to be with you. And it must be a guy. It cannot be a second sister.
Because you're not allowed to be alone with women as missionaries.
You don't
want to,
don't want to transgress, you know?
All right, so let's switch over to Kristen and talk about your coming to Mormonism, because you did not grow up Mormon, correct?
I did not. My mother grew up Catholic. I don't really know anything about my dad's upbringing as far as religious is concerned. And my father passed away when I was 3, so Didn't really have any of that anyway. But my mother didn't really like Catholicism. She found it very restrictive and couldn't understand it most of the time, because back then it was in Latin. Mm. So she kind of was doing her own thing, raising me. For a while, she tried out Jehovah's Witnessism, and that was okay. These little old ladies would come to our house, and I'd be like, oh, you gotta come see my cool toys. They'd bring up my Barbie mobile and the ship or the boat. And so we moved to Wyoming. And
where were you before that?
We were in Hayden Lake, Idaho, which is a suburb of Coeur d'Alene. Yeah, and apparently that's a large, neo-Nazi area and Jewish area as well, which I didn't learn until well into my 20s. But when we moved to Powell, Wyoming, which is way up north by the Montana border, my mother knew my older sister and her family. They lived in Cody, Wyoming, which is like 30 miles away. But she didn't really know anybody else, so that religion allowed her to make new friends. And
The Jehovah's
Witnesses, yes. And it was okay, like I said, until I learned about, no celebrating of holidays, no saying the Pledge of Allegiance in school. And I was 12, 11. I didn't want to seem like a shallow child or anything, but I mean, Christmas is pretty cool, Even if you only get one present, Christmas is pretty cool. And Halloween, no Halloween?
Right.
To a little kid, that religion's kind of a bummer. Later on, I think I was 13 or so, and I'm sitting in the Kingdom Hall, and they're bringing up the 144,000. And I just was like, that's not right. How many billions of people have existed before us? How many will exist now? How many exist later? And only this tiny fraction of amount of people are going to make it to heaven? That is not the loving God that anybody preaches. And I was thinking, if you believe that, then you should not be proselyting.
Because you're, lowering your odds.
Yeah, exactly. So I was like, Mom, I'm not going back. That's nuh-uh. Okay, so fast forward a little bit. After that, I just kind of went through this very short phase of, maybe I just don't believe in God. Just thinking about all the diseases and all the poverty in the world, just a lot of information when you're in middle school, high school. So it's like, maybe I just don't believe in anything. One of my best friends growing up, she was LDS, but she never talked about it, ever brought it up or anything. And there was a gentleman who ran a scrap metal business. And my mom went to him and said, hey, we have this wood-burning fireplace and we need to weld it because it keeps falling off and it's going to break my foot one day. That's not good.
The front door.
Yeah, so you open it and it comes out, but the hinge was not hinged. And so, we almost broke our feet a couple times. So he said, I'll weld it for free if you let me bring these missionaries over. They just, need some practice, need to talk to people. My mom, being the frugal woman she is like, you can bring whoever you want. You're going to do it for free. Yeah. So they come, and at this time I'm 15, 19-year-old boys, as we discussed earlier, to a 15-year-old girl. Yes. Gorgeous. Gorgeous young men. They both were from Utah, which I thought was kind of interesting. Just the more I learned about Mormonism, I was kind of like, Rome is kind of like the Catholics' home base is Salt Lake, like yours, and just asking questions, and it was interesting. As it progressed, they could kind of tell that my mom really wasn't interested, but they saw that I was. This was when they still had the discussions, so the discussion that I really remember really vividly was they threw all these blocks on the floor, and we were supposed to build our own bridge and get as many blocks as we could, church. And I had mine, and I built it, and they built theirs, and then they were telling me how all of these churches were great, but they weren't complete, and they didn't have everything. Fast forward a little bit, and then they said, we feel like you're ready to get baptized, and I was just kind of like, what? What? You want me to be baptized?
So, take me back to this block demonstration. How did they complete their... Or were they building a not-complete church, too?
Right, because all of the blocks represented the complete church.
And then we had to race and get as many blocks as we could to build our church.
Okay.
So, like, my church had the Ten Commandments. I remember that vividly. Because I was like, well, what about the Ten Commandments? Those are basic. Those are important. And they kind of lay out everything that pretty much all religions believe. And he's like, yeah, the Ten Commandments are great, but that's not everything. What about the Word of Wisdom, which is something that I have? And I was like, oh, okay. Like, just, yeah, I'm 15. What do I know, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Were you taking this in and really considering it and deciding if you believed in it, or were you just kind of playing along because you wanted them to come over?
A little of both. Definitely I didn't really consider it until they said that I was ready to be baptized. I mean, as I was considering it, I figured this will be a life-changing thing. You know, I mean, this is definitely going to take my life in a totally different direction, maybe than where I'm going now. I mean, I'm in high school, I'm not going anywhere, but afterward, what I decide to do. And I figured, just from the role models that I had, like my best friend's parents, and I had been to church maybe a couple times at that point, and kind of just met some other families like to them. And so I figured, okay, well, this seems okay. And I mean, it was partially thanks to my mom, because me being a minor, I had to have her permission to do it. And she said, you know, if it makes you happy, do it. If you don't want to do it, don't do it. And so a week later, I got baptized. And I got baptized on a Sunday. So I actually was not confirmed a member until the next Sunday, which kind of made me feel like I was in limbo a little bit. It was a little weird. But yeah, then I became a confirmed member, and
did you attend with your friend? And
yeah, just my friend. My mom rarely came, just because it wasn't her thing, / I think she was working on Sundays at the time.
Was she still doing the Jehovah's Witness thing too?
No. She kind of had, once we had been in Powell for, I think, 2 or 3 years, she'd made plenty of friends at that point, had lots of work contacts, didn't really need that anymore. And I think she just kind of agreed with me on a couple of the deciding factors of my not sticking around.
Okay. After you joined the church and you're attending, did you feel like you had a testimony, or was it even something that you thought about, or were you just like, this is fun, this is, you know, upstanding moral, good mm-hmm. stuff, and that's as far as your thinking went?
It was a testimony, I think. Maybe it wasn't a full-fledged testimony, but I mean, it was one of those it makes sense testimonies, like the whole, there were prophets in the Old Testament, mm-hmm. then why aren't there prophets today? You know, why isn't it continuing? And, oh, we have a prophet, and, oh, that's how it came to pass. Oh, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of things in the church that made sense, as far as, you know, you stay for 3 hours, and the modesty thing. I mean, it was kind of a bummer to give up tank tops, but, you know.
You got Halloween.
Yeah, and you got Halloween and Christmas. I mean, I just wanted to explain, like, how devoted I really was at that mm-hmm. point, especially in high school, just because, I love Pepsi. Love Pepsi. Pepsi is divine. And when I heard that the LDS people didn't necessarily do the whole caffeine thing, I was like, but what? No Pepsi. Okay. It's okay, they make caffeine-free Pepsi. Yay!
So you drink caffeine-free Pepsi.
So I drank caffeine-free Pepsi. Got the special Pepsi with the gold seal around the top, and it's caffeine-free.
Is there a flavor difference?
I didn't notice one.
Okay, so devoted convert to the point that you're not drinking Pepsi or caffeinated Pepsi anymore. Mm-hmm. Are you fully active, going to Wednesday and Sunday activities?
Yes, once I got my driver's license, I was at pretty much everything that there was.
So did
I
you
went
do
to dances, I went to
young
services.
Yeah. Progress.
Yeah, I finished the whole thing. And since I was 15, I had missed, like, the Beehives and the
Half the Mymaids.
I went through and I got it all. I went through it really quickly, too. Like, I picked the things that I could do, like, quickly. Really quickly. And I got my little medallion. And, yeah, I felt pretty special. Because they were all like, oh, my gosh, look at Kristen. She's gotten all this done. And look at you guys. You've had all your junk done. Like,
so you graduate high school, go on to college.
Mm-hmm.
Were you active in college?
I actually couldn't be because I was a theater major. There was always something going on at church and I had to be at rehearsal. Sundays were really awkward because on Sundays at school they only offered like a brunch, and it was right during church. So it was I could eat or I could go to church.
So you were living in the dorms on a meal plan.
Yeah.
And they offered one meal on Sunday. What did they expect the kids to do the rest of the time? Ramen noodle on their hot pot?
Pretty much.
Okay. And so, hot pots were probably banned, or hot plates.
I know, hot plates were. We could have microwaves and little tiny fridges.
Okay.
So that was okay. But, yeah, so it was a rough patch. Also, at the time, I got my first serious boyfriend, and so we fell into some of that.
And second basing.
Some second, third, quadruple, 12th base. And so I went to my bishop about it, and...
12th base?
Yes, 12th base. And he just was really unsympathetic towards the situation. Sympathetic's probably the wrong word. Unempathetic. Uncaring about the situation. And he just said, you need to stop. Just, like, flat out.
Listen, whore.
Not in so many words, but there was definitely that you are a harlot kind of feel to it, and I explained that to my boyfriend, and he was like, okay, well, we'll stop, but, I mean, who can stop once they get started, really? I mean, there are those few who are strong and can. I had never personally made that commitment to myself to be this virginal creature who was going to be pristine and white, and so that didn't happen, and since I felt kind of shunned by the bishop anyway, I was like, okay, well, just won't go. Then it actually became a situation with my boyfriend's parents. They found out I was LDS, and they found out he was interested, and he took the sacrament once with me and crying, really powerful. I was like, oh, we're gonna get married, he's gonna get baptized, oh my god, it's gonna actually work out, oh my gosh, this is great, now I don't have to repent and all that stuff. But then his parents told him that they would disown him if he became LDS. So...
What were they?
Nothing.
So it wasn't like they were evangelicals and this was you going to hell.
No, they didn't they didn't go to church or anything.
Were they atheists?
I never asked, but I don't think so.
Hmm. Huh, okay.
But yeah, so that was kind of the first, whoa, people don't like us kind of thing? Because, I mean...
First exposure, yeah.
Yeah, first exposure to people not liking the LDS people. So I was like, oh, well, I mean, I'm already not going to church that much, so, you know, no big deal. That was an interesting experience because theater and church are so far apart. They're almost as bad as being gay and being Mormon. You know, just they're very separate worlds. You gotta be able to make out with people at random notice. You gotta smoke a cigarette on stage if required. So... It was hard. And then my relationship on top of that. So it was definitely changing a lot of how I felt about my religion. Not necessarily how I thought about my religion. Like, I still believed it was true. I just didn't talk about it ever. Because it's easier to be accepted by your friends and things if you don't spiel a lot of wacky stuff at them. When I moved on to the University of Wyoming, I had made a commitment to myself that I was not going to let that happen again. I was going to be clean. I had gone through the whole repentance process, which, by the way, is awful. Is awful. They, like, make it sound like it's my fault that I'm in this shame state, that I can never be clean again. And I'm like, well, you're making me read... that book.
The Miracle of Forgiveness?
Yes. And boy, is that's a bad book. Oh my gosh, it was awful. It was hard because I went to the school counselor first before I went to the bishop. Because I didn't like him. I didn't want to go back to the bishop and talk about this stuff. So I went to the school counselor and I'm like working through this stuff. And I'm like, can I ask you a personal question? And he's like, yeah. I'm like... Did you have sex before you were married? He's like, yeah, so? And I'm like, so? It's not a big deal? So building that and then going through the repentance process. So there's these mixed signals and messages in my mind about what was okay with the church, what wasn't okay. So anyway, I went to the University of Wyoming and I had resolved to be, I didn't want to say perfect because Tom says I think of perfect, but what I just... trying to be really, really, really good.
Well, there's a checklist that Mormonism has, and and I know what it's like, because I went through this process, too. Anytime I, like, moved, I thought, okay, from now on, read your scriptures every day, pray every day, go into church, they'll give me a calling, I'll do that calling, all that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And that was going pretty well. I mean, all of my friends at... UW, except for like two, which were in the dorms just next to me, who were my neighbors. All of my friends were LDS. Mm-hmm. So that was a new gear, kind of. And it wasn't necessarily in the theater department anymore, it was more in the dance department. So I was like, okay, so pretty much I just have to be naked every once in a while during a dance. That's no big deal. And I had kind of drawn to the conclusion where if it's for your job, your religion has to take a back step, because that's how you're gonna earn your living, that's how you're gonna do it.
Well, not only that, but think of the dancing that they do at BYU. Those costumes are quite often not modest. Mm-hmm. And all the ballroom dancing high school kids, the girls are all wearing sexy dresses. So there's definitely a cultural justification for saying, I can do this and it's separate from who I really am.
Exactly.
In my personal life.
Exactly. And that's kind of where I went with that. As the school year progressed, I was really unhappy with University of Wyoming as far as the dance program was concerned. I loved the institute. I loved my friends and I loved the church atmosphere, but I hated the dance department. They made me feel subhuman. And they made me feel very fat. I was called fat pretty regularly while I was there. I've been called fat every day since I was like 10. Maybe not every day, but a lot. So I have this thought process in my head already. What possessed me to be a dance major if everyone thinks you're fat? I don't know. But
I did that. Well, I think you wanted to just prove to them and to yourself that you could change that, I suppose.
More like I thought if I danced, I wouldn't be fat anymore. I mean, and I was. I mean, at the time that the premier ballerina dance instructor at University of Wyoming called me fat and out of shape, I was in the best shape of my life. I was a size 9, which I'd never been. I was in single digits, for crying out loud. I danced 5 hours a day. I ate nothing but vegetables and Jell-O, and then I would run on top of that. Because at that point I was in the Naval Reserve. Like, I was beyond hurt.
So you being unhealthy to try to maintain this image that you thought that, or that they wanted out of you, basically.
And I know that I don't have a ballerina body. I know that. I haven't been dancing since I was 3 to have my body trained that way, but I could have been a modern dancer, and I could have been a tap dancer, you know? Mm-hmm. I could have been so much more than what they said, but I let that get to me. And I say that because I'm still not done with school. Because of that, I dropped out and I joined the Navy, which was not my best decision. That was a very impromptu, let's do this decision.
And was that because, like, you felt, well, you weren't making a choice out of a healthy spot, and you were kind of floundering, and that looked like an option, and so you did it?
That, and, like, it felt like no one else wanted me, and the Navy was saying, we want you, you know, so.
And what year did you join the Navy?
2006.
So it was well after 9/11. So yeah. It wasn't, like, before 9/11 where you thought, well, I'll just, you know, be stationed somewhere and work. Did you have fears of being deployed and that kind of thing?
No. No fear at all. I actually...
Did you think you would be deployed?
I actually tried to be deployed. Let me back up a little bit. I went to boot camp, and I was really, really LDS there. I went to church every Sunday because it was an opportunity to talk to somebody else besides everybody who's in your division and your RDCs, the people who are always yelling at you. They're not there at church. So that was really nice.
I recently did an interview with a guy who was a lifelong Navy guy.
Yeah.
And he said that in boot camp, you have no life, basically. And the one little thing that you can go do is go to church, right?
In boot camp, yes. Yes. You are, you know, you're marched everywhere. You're told, you know, don't fall asleep unless we tell you to sleep. Study, study, study. But after a while, you can't study more. You fall asleep and they yell at you. So... My boot camp was probably nowhere near as hard as his, just because time has progressed and people have cried and whined, oh, they were mean to me. So they can't actually curse at you anymore. They can't physically touch you, but they can PT you to death. They can make you do push-ups until your arms literally fall off. So, but after boot camp, I went to my school where I learned how to do my job. I didn't have a car, and the nearest church was like 10 miles away. And so I didn't go to church. And I was kind of like, well, I'm in the Navy, and that's different than normal life, so I can be a different person. I don't have to be LDS, which seems really odd to me, just going back and looking at it, I'm like, what was you? What were you, Kristen? Were you LDS or were you not? Because once I was out of boot camp, I wasn't LDS. I went to clubs and I wore ridiculously tight clothing when I was in civilian clothes, had another boyfriend. So, I mean, I don't know what I was thinking exactly.
Well, I think you told me before that the Navy was a really hard thing and you were just trying to survive it.
Yes.
So that might be why, like, those things were escapism, maybe?
Well, not at the very beginning. At the very beginning, the Navy was pretty cool, because I hadn't been on a ship yet. Once I got to the ship and was confined to this tiny, tiny space mm-hmm. with these people who did not like me, you know, and they didn't like me because I was this specific job. They didn't like me because I was white. They didn't like me because I was a woman. They didn't like me because I was older than they were when I had joined the military. I have not been combated with so much dislike in my life. Even in high school wasn't that bad, you know? Like, to have everyone just be angry at me for all these things. And that's when I did start going back to church. And everyone's happy to see you at church. That's when I bought a car and I went every Sunday that I wasn't already out to sea or had duty where I had to stay on the ship, I was at every single function again. And that, like you said, from the other time we talked, was my escape, because the Navy was not a well thought out decision and I was very, very, very unhappy. I tried to commit suicide a couple times. I was hospitalized a couple times. And they finally said, you know what, maybe you should just not be in the Navy. But prior to that, going back to the talking about being deployed, I actually volunteered to go to Iraq when Iraq was still the big hot zone. And they were all like, what? I was like, I want to get off of this ship. The best part was I was going to be deployed the same time the ship was going to be deployed. So I was going to miss being on the ship while it was deployed. I was like, this is a win-win. I'm going to make a ton more money. I'm not going to be on the ship. I'm going to get to see the war zone, see what we're fighting for. I'm going to get to meet new people. I'm going to get to travel. Like, how is this bad? Call my mom, and I could hear the blood drain out of her body. I heard it, literally. But I ended up being discharged from the Navy due to inability to adapt, is what they call it. It was an honorable discharge, because I did try. I did try. I really did. I mean, I did everything that the psychologist would asked me to do, you know, draw things, you know, be creative when you can. But no, I just was very unhappy. So came home, did that for a while.
Lived at home
for a little while. Got a job right away, which was nice. So
were you Mormon then?
Yes, but I was a very different Mormon at that point. Having done the whole non-religious thing, my whole view of Mormonism was slightly warped. I don't know how to explain it, and I should be able to explain it, but I can't.
Did you still believe it was true?
Yes. Well, true. I believed it was a religion at that point, okay. If that makes sense. I didn't believe it was the only religion. I just believed it was a religion at that point.
Did you believe there was a God?
Yes.
So you thought there was a God, and there's all these religions of people who are worshiping that God and...
Yes.
Okay. Alright, so you're living at home, you're working, being sort of Mormon.
Sort of Mormon is right. Started dating again. It's all boys. It's all their fault. I'm so good at letting me a boy. And he was unlike anybody I'd ever dated before. He smoked, drank, he had tattoos. I mean, like, just a really bad guy for me. Not that people who drink and smoke and have tattoos are bad. This guy, he was a bad guy. I don't know why I dated him. But he got me into some more problems again. So that kind of warped my sense of what's okay, what's not. We continued dating when I left for the LDS Business College. Sort of, but not really. Like, it was like an open kind of thing. Like, I'm gonna stay in touch with you. If you meet somebody, great. If you don't, hey, I'm here kind of thing. I went to the LDS Business College because I didn't get into BYU.
Okay.
Which, I don't want to say broke my heart, because it didn't break my heart, but I was disgusted. I was like, what? How am I not good enough to get into your school? I have 130 credits, so I probably had enough to graduate. Maybe that's why they didn't take me.
Okay, so let's go back to you and tell me what happened after when you came home from your mission.
I was very happy to be at home, and more specifically, I was actually very happy to be honorably...
You returned with honor.
Yeah, returned with honor. I returned with honor. I mean, the that infatuation with that girl haunted me during my whole mission. And I was just trying to be good enough to not be that kind of a missionary. And,
okay.
Specifically about my honorable discharges, to set a guy apart to go, or to set a person apart mm-hmm. to go serve a mission, that was a priesthood ordinance. And I was very surprised when all that was needed was for a guy of a proper authority. In this case, I think he was the first counselor, saint counselor, I forget,
of the
state presidency.
Of state presidency.
And he just said, I honorably release you. And I was like, that's it? Laying on of hands were needed for the first bit of this. And
it's like, here's your final paycheck, you're done.
You know, here's your certificate of release. You know, like, what? I mean, fine, cool, yay, but that's weird.
Didn't seem very priesthoody.
Didn't seem priesthoody, no.
Okay. You were still faithful, I'm assuming?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was very, very skittish, I think, actually, is a good way of describing it.
Did you have a hard transition back into civilian life?
It was relief, but it was scary. I was a totally different person from when I went. I was like, can I sleep in? I don't want to sleep in. I want to be up, and I want to study my scriptures still. I want to, you know, still be this amazing guy. But I just started seeing what life was like in the real world. My mom was very surprised. I asked her what I could do around the house. To clean, to vacuum, to, you know. Well, I was excited about mowing the lawn, which surprises me. I hate mowing that lawn. And it's not a dislike. It is a legitimate, I hate mowing that lawn. Hate it. And I actually volunteered more than once to mow that thing.
So you felt like you had had a, what am I trying to say? You turned over a new leaf in life.
I turned a new leaf.
You had grown up, and you were a good, helpful, productive.
You know, yeah. I definitely liked movies and music and such.
There's a theory, and I don't know how tested it is, that that's why Mormons are so successful in business, is that they go through 2 years of training on...
Oh, yeah.
Put your shoulder to the wheel constantly. Don't ever pause.
There was one guy who was during my mission who, it was a area training meeting, I think is what it was. This local member who basically his job was very much just like his mission. I think he worked in insurance. I forget what it was. But you did the referrals, you did the networking, you knocked on doors, you did the missionary work.
So, I know the years after your mission until your marriage were not easy years. What was the space of time between when you got off your mission until you got married? 5 years?
Probably about 5 years, yeah.
Okay, so during that 5 years, I know it was kind of a rough time for you. When did that start to happen after you got home? Because you went through a phase of going to be productive, I'm the good Mormon guy, and then something started to change, right?
Yeah, definitely. I forget what my age was. I think I was 23 or 24. I think that's when I was going to the library, actually, and I was checking movies out constantly. Documentary films, various movies of different ratings and such. It ironically is actually a pursuit of godliness. God, supposedly, is this being of perfect knowledge and perfect experience, perfect da-da-da-da-da-da. How in the world can we expect to achieve that kind of perfection if we don't expose ourselves to the more controversial side of life? Hence, I started exposing myself to R-rated movies and went through a phase of just shocking myself to see how far I could go.
And still maintain your beliefs and still maintain your morals, or just...
I suppose maintain my sanity, maintain my morals, maintain a relationship with God. But ironically, I felt like when I went farther and farther down, supposedly, quote-unquote down, I felt closer and closer to my objective of knowing what God knows. If it was rated R, I wanted to see it. If it was dark and scary, I wanted to see it.
Or how did you explain to yourself the way the church teaches about media you should consume and what you were doing? Did you feel like they were just being protective or did you feel like, I mean, how did you justify that for yourself?
Part of that was actually when I decided to start asking questions about language, about words, about obscenities, technically. I studied the etymology of them, the definition of them, the context, all of that.
And why they're used.
Yeah, why they're considered bad. When I saw the F word, I looked for that and I found the definition of that, and I was like, well, that's actually describing a cool event, a cool action, pretty nice action, right? That's not a bad word, is it? You know? And plus, when I found that it was in the vulgar category, mm-hmm. I found the vulgar word that was the switch, I think, actually, for me with the language, was when I saw the definition of vulgar as language used by common folk. Mm-hmm. Basically, if you were less educated, you didn't really know better than to use this slang. And that's what it is, it's just slang. When I openly said to my computer, are you freaking kidding me? That's why?
It's a swear word.
Really?
Yeah.
That's why it's bad. That is stupid. Oh, that is dumb. And I went through all the other words that I learned were bad, and I found all those definitions, and I even went up to my parents and said, hey, I learned this information, this is crazy, what do you think about this? And they were not happy about my decision to...
Do you remember why you wanted to look into why vulgarity was vulgarity?
I was raised my whole life to believe that those words are bad, but...
You just wanted to know why they were bad?
I wanted to know why they were bad, and I had this history instilled in me of these friends who used these words. I let them use their freedom of speech, but I cringed when I heard them. But, you know, just that free thought process of, are they really bad?
So you weren't trying to justify your own use of them?
Not really, no. No, I was never using them. After I found that realization, I started using them. I didn't care.
You went from that into you need to expose yourself,
yeah,
like test
like...
the metal of your soul against all of this darkness in order to gain the knowledge that God has.
I think one of my number one fears of life is not having control. I hated being scared.
Okay.
I hated not having control. I hated being scared.
And you felt like getting rid of that fear was growing closer to being godlike.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so how was your... I mean, you're still faithful at that point.
Mm-hmm. So I went to church, and I studied Satanism. Mm-hmm. I watched interviews of Anton LaVey's daughter. I watched interviews of those. I studied Satanism, actually, and it was very interesting. I never actually read the Satanic Bible until fairly recently, actually.
And how were you sharing this with people?
Yeah. Because I was actually talking about Satanism in church.
Satanism is not what people think it is.
Yes.
Unless they're exposed to it. But,
right.
You know, you say Satanism to, you know, your mom.
Yeah. I actually talked about Satanism
with my mom. And she thinks you're, like, going up into the hills and wearing black robes and sacrificing babies.
She actually was like, what is this? What are you doing? Mm-hmm. She's not a person who actually, like, judges you right off the bat, though. Not usually. I mean, she judged me instantly when I said that I was thinking about a lip ring, not even wanting to go for it. I was just thinking about that. Just telling her that I'm thinking about a lip ring. Nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
Next it'll be tattoos. After that I'll be going out, drinking beer and smoking cigarettes and not going to church anymore and, oh, what are you doing? What have I done? I'm a terrible parent, blah, blah, blah. But when I talked about Satanism, she was like, what? And I explained, Satanism is not stupidness, you know? It's self-worship. I mentioned that in church even. Like, I used that in Sunday school and...
Like, people would cringe, probably.
Oh, man. People were like, what in the world?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Weren't you taken off of that calling shortly after...
I was taking out that calling.
You were teaching Sunday school?
I was, not Sunday school, actually. I was at Elotorm.
So you were definitely falling out of a traditional belief in anything? Well, Mormonism.
Fully, just, not really, actually. It was more like the conservative view of Mormonism.
Okay.
I was developing a more liberal perspective of Mormonism.
Okay.
But I still was in it.
There's precedence for that if... Because Joseph Smith taught that all knowledge is true, or, you know, like, there is true knowledge out there, and you can, what is it, conscribe it into one great whole or something.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
Okay, well, why don't we talk quickly about the pressure that's put on returned missionaries to get married.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah, sure, yes.
How that played into your life after your mission.
Oh, man. Oh, I was such a jerk. That was definitely one part of the awkwardness. I definitely felt the pressure to find a woman to be my eternal mate. And
so I've heard a myth, I don't know if it's a myth,
go for it.
That they'll say to you, you've fulfilled your first obligation to the Lord by serving a mission, and now it's time you fulfill your second obligation to the Lord by getting married. And that's your number one goal when you return from here.
I heard that, yes. I definitely heard that. I know of some people who said that certain sisters would deny a date, even just mm-hmm. deny a date with a guy. That was practically sacrilege for in some people's perspectives mm-hmm. and some people's opinions. I didn't agree with that. Like, I definitely was not okay with, like, 12 kids. I didn't want the wife to be the one person at home slaving away to make a clean home, mm-hmm. cook the dinners, care for the kids, me going out to work and such. I honestly felt like that was totally sexist. And from my perspective with my family, honestly with my mom and dad, I definitely felt like my mom was viewed as the slave. My dad also, you know, constantly said, no, she's not the slave, this is what she wants to do. And I was like, I don't know, man. I mean, she talks about wanting to go out and riding a bike, you know, likes photography, likes, you know, being artistic and creative. And I felt like she was, you know, being...
socially controlled to fulfill the...
Slightly, yeah, conditioned to think a certain way. And I never... I made this promise that I would never be married with a woman who would feel like she was being a slave. I didn't want her to feel like a slave.
But you still felt like I need to get married.
Oh, I definitely felt,
and you dated, and...
I talked about marriage, I talked about kids, I talked about...
So a date was a marriage interview.
It was like a marriage interview, yeah.
So do you feel like going through those dating processes and having them not work out, did you feel like it was starting to jade you or make you unhappy, or how was that?
Yeah, it wasn't working for me, and I felt like such a failure when I wasn't married. I was like, wow, I'm nearing 25 and I'm still not married. Ugh.
I'm normal.
Oh, yeah, right? I didn't really want to be normal. That was the problem, too. I didn't want to be normal.
So, were you living in Midway when you started dating Kristen?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, let's go back to Kristen. You said that you moved to Salt Lake City to attend LDS Business College, and you left behind a guy in sort of a, maybe we'll see each other, maybe we won't. And tell me what your life was like when you moved here for that.
I moved to Mormon land, as I dubbed it, because I was 23, 24 at the time, and I was like, okay, I have to get out of Powell because all the little ladies are starting to sit by me in church and say, do you need me to go with you to the singles ward, honey? I'll do that. No joke. And I was like, no, I don't want to go to the singles ward. I don't want to get stuck in Powell, Wyoming. I don't want to be here. As much as I love my family, I wish they were closer to me rather than me being closer to them, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So, pretty much, when you don't want to marry what's around you, and I honestly hadn't dated really any guy that was LDS in my entire dating life. So I figured if I'm almost ready to get married, I should be somewhere where I'm around people who are like me. So that whole BYU thing didn't turn out, and so I went to the LDS Business College, which, wow, that's basically like a Mormon high school. It's not college. It's all in one room, or one building, mm-hmm. and, God, they were all so young. And, I mean, not to pick on people who are young, because, you know, they're doing a different thing, they're all discovering, but I was...
You'd been through the Navy.
I had done a lot at this point, and so it was kind of a step back for me, it felt like, and this was my first real taste of Utah LDS Mormon culture, and I didn't like it. I didn't like that there were so many of them. There were rooms and rooms of people, and they all were just always so happy, so fakingly happy, and so vapid in their happiness. There wasn't anything else to them except that they were a nice person and they smiled a lot. Like, there was nothing in the cogs.
Because they're young.
Sure.
Because they're young. And because they're Mormon. this was also the time that Prop 8 came out. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of talk about it. And I was just kind of like, what's the big deal? You know, because I've been around gays my whole life. I was a dance and theater major.
Your brother.
Members of my family are gay. Mm-hmm. You know, so to me it was like, what's the big deal? They're not hurting you. They're not going to crawl into your bed with you, you know.
They're fun.
Let them do their own thing. It's no big deal. And I was kind of thinking, I guess I didn't realize it until later after the whole Prop 8 thing gotten over, but I was kind of like, what's the church doing, sticking its nose in it anyway. It's, that's a total separation of church and state. Mm. But anyway, so I turned to the internet. Yeah, LDSSingles.com. We met online, sent a couple messages back and forth. Mm-hmm. To be honest, the picture was a little scary. Kind of looked a little mountain man-y with this big bushy beard. Anyway, so we met at Temple Square. I wanted to meet at Liberty Park, but I didn't know where it was exactly, so I couldn't explain where, because I wanted to meet somewhere outside, public, just in case this guy's a cool creepazoid. But since I couldn't remember where Liberty Park was, we met at Temple Square, because it was only like a block away from where I lived. We walked around for hours, and then we got hungry, and then we walked around, and then I was like, hey, I got a soccer game, so I should go, and...
Oh, quickly, I was actually very surprised when you said, let's exchange iPods. That was the first suggestion to ever do that I ever experienced. I was like, whoa, that's a cool
way
of learning.
Yeah, that was on
that was our first stage when we were walking around, you know, that Temple Square area. She's like, let's exchange iPods and see what music we like. Oh, that's a fun idea. I honestly was flabbergasted by that. I was like, that's cool. I like that. And it was funny. But, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I got bulldozed by this behemoth tractor of a guy.
Oh,
and so I got hurt, and that gave Tom the opportunity to break the touch barrier. And he rubbed my leg a little bit.
Game.
Yeah. Okay. I was like, ah, why do you not touch me?
Yeah.
We went to Twilight after that because it was the only thing in the dollar theater going on at the time. Oh, so bad.
I like the first movie. Of all movies, I like the first one.
So,
but...
Yeah, so basically the whole point is that, you know, we connected really well right away. Mm-hmm. Like Tom talked about earlier, he brought up marriage that first date, brought up that he was not going to give his girl diamond, and I was kind of like, because of the blood diamonds in Africa thing, and I was like, I want a diamond. You know, so, I mean, not afraid to say what I wanted to, but I was, you know, kind of wiggle my way in there. Well, what if we get, like, an antique ring? Then it'd be okay.
You weren't turned off by his...
Well, I mean, he wasn't talking about marrying me. Mm-hmm. He was just talking about marriage.
The future, yeah.
And I figured that may be a tad early, but, I mean, why not? Let's talk about kind of what we would potentially like.
We were making a connection, and I didn't think that was a problem to talk about. You know, if we were both mature adults and realized that we were entering into really just a hypothetical conversation, I thought, why not just talk about marriage?
Yeah.
There you go.
So, fast forward.
When you got on LDS Singles, were you in a phase... I mean, you were attending LDS Business College, and you got on LDS Singles. Had you entered a phase where you thought, I'm ready to get married, I'm going to marry an LDS guy, so I'm looking for LDS guys?
Well, I mean, seemed like dating non-members was a really bad thing, and then they're pushing temple mm-hmm. when you're there, and the temple's...
Right there.
Right there. I figured that was what you're supposed to do.
Okay.
I mean, to be honest, I didn't really care if I got married in the temple. But I wanted to be married to somebody who shared my religious views just because it had broken up so many of my relationships.
Okay.
I didn't bring that up on here, but it broke up pretty much all of my relationships, was me being LDS and them not.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured if I want my relationship to adhesify, I should be dating someone in my religious affiliation. And so I dated a couple guys at the BC who were my age. Amazing, there were a couple. But one guy was uber conservative. Like,
and
he was from Chile, so he had a different culture about him, which I thought was kind of cool. I'm like, oh, I could go to Chile, that would be neat. But way too conservative for me. I just could not be around him. And so, yeah.
So you were on LDS Singles, met Tom, you guys had a connection. How long did you date?
Oh, boy.
Tom loves to get
the dates. The dates.
This is his
funny.
Favorite
like,
thing.
Usually the female spouse is usually like, you don't remember dates? But no, I know the dates. Okay, met February 27th. This is all the same year.
Nine.
It's all 2009. All the same year. It's crazy. I proposed April 6th, and we were married August 6th. All
so
the same
we
year.
Weren't dating very long before we were engaged, but we had a long engagement. So it was roughly 6 months, maybe not six.
And it just continued working. I think
months.
We made a deal that if it's not working, then
Then you just won't go through with it.
Then just won't go through with it.
Which is crazy. We never thought we would be that Utah couple got married that quick. Because we even talked about it in our first couple of dates. You know, we're going to get married. We're going to extend this. You know, let's wait a year. Let's wait blah, blah, blah. But it just didn't happen.
Okay. Yeah. So you were endowed when you went through to get married, I assume?
No, I actually got endowed the Tuesday before we got married, and we got married on a Thursday.
Yeah.
Okay, but you didn't go through, like, years before you got married.
No. Mm-hmm. I actually was considering going on a mission when I met Tom, but I still hadn't filled
out paperwork.
Hadn't filled out paperwork. I was working on just getting myself worthy and getting myself in the mental...
Okay.
She went to missionary prep classes.
I did do missionary prep classes and that, so...
And she was angry, actually, that I...
Derailed
the mission.
A little bit. I was all excited. I thought I was going to get to learn a language and go somewhere exotic or something.
Yeah, you would have gone to Arizona.
I know, right?
And then I wouldn't have gone. I'd be like, nope, try again.
And I promised a couples mission tour, too. I was like, no, we'll compensate.
I was like, great, we'll be old. Awesome. So, I had not been endowed, which is probably a good thing, considering I was rampant in my sexualness.
Yeah,
so.
Okay.
I would have been condemned to the greatest circle of hell there was, had I been endowed.
And that's actually one reason why our marriage was so rushed, too, actually, was that we were trying to stay off of...
Yeah, we would actually, not see each other for days at a time, because...
We were feeling the attraction.
Our bishops were total jerks, too. But anyway,
about going to the temple for the first time and how that affected you.
So my mother, as you guys probably figured out, is not LDS. I had prepared her from pretty much the time they told me my mom couldn't go in the temple with me, that, hey, Mom, I get married, I'm getting married probably in the temple, and that you won't be able to go, but, you know, we'll do a second ceremony for you. I don't know if I'm okay with that now, but...
How did she handle...
She was fine with it. She understood that this was part of the religion, and unfortunately she couldn't be there, but she was there for pictures, she was there for right outside. To me, I was like, you didn't really miss anything. You missed...
Yeah.
Us on the altar and we kissed.
Yeah.
Like,
A special handshake.
Well, she didn't know about that stuff. So I had tried to prepare her for that. As far as endowment, let me go back a little. So I didn't have my mom to go with me, who normally takes you through as a woman. So I had my then good friend at the time take me through, and that was weird. I didn't like the new name they gave me. I thought it was ugly. And I was
Judith.
I was concerned that that was what I was going to be called throughout eternity. And I was like, I like my name, you know, that's the name I've grown up with. I'm kind of attached to it. There's this ugly name that's nothing to me. And I got my endowment and our sealing done in the Salt Lake Temple. It's big. It's ugly on the inside. Not on the outside. I think it's very pretty on the outside. But inside, it's very ornate. And it's green and pink and gold. And I'm not an ornate person. I am not a green, pink, and gold person. Ooh. Anyway, so sitting there in that white dress with my little pouch, learned my new name, sitting in the front... Why do you have to put new people in the front, too? I mean, like, everything is on the spot.
Greater social pressure to not run.
Greater social pressure to not leave. Exactly, because I sat down, and I'm sitting across from the men. I can't even sit next to my fiancé. And then they say, you know, if any so I drew, you can leave now. I was kind of like, I could leave, but then... are gonna,
parents.
Not want to have their son marry me if I can't handle it, and, you know, we're gonna get married in 2 days. Mm-hmm. This is gonna change a lot of plans if I don't do this.
Yeah. Total social pressure.
A little bit.
Yeah. The whole thing.
There was social pressure. I did want to, but it's still weird. I mean, I had gone through 4 temple prep classes. 4. They don't tell you anything. So, and it's live, so it's kind of weird, because all the people who work at the temple are in their 80s, so
playing
Adam and Eve and the devil, because the devil wears a black waistcoat. Wait, they wear that at church. Now, like, it's very mixed messages in there.
Yes.
And they don't...
Yes.
And the funny thing is, like, there's a Mormon expression, talk about the changes in the temple. mm-hmm. that if you haven't listened to, you have to, because
nothing
nothing makes sense because they've changed it over the years, so you don't know what they're doing. Like, even in 1991, they changed a bunch of stuff, so,
yeah.
you know, I don't
votes.
Know.
They took votes.
About yeah, so, like, I didn't know half wow. of the stuff that I'm doing, that it actually means anything, or that any of the clothes mean anything. So, yeah, I'm putting the stuff on, as the guy tells us to, and everybody's putting their clothes on. This is really weird. Like, it's not how I would have pictured the temple ceremony to be. I think I would have expected it to be a little bit more theatrical, just to help you realize that it isn't real, and that it's symbolic, versus this very solemn thing, and everyone's quiet, and they don't talk, and they just change clothes, and then they sit back down. I don't know what I'm supposed to be getting out of this. Then I get these new signs and tokens. I better remember all this stuff, or I'm gonna be dead. And then, at the end, we get all the stuff. I did not want to do the prayer circle, but it just felt like I was already overwhelmed enough. Let me go stand in a circle, too? Mm-hmm. Like, isn't this a little creepy? This is so culty. I can't even know. I don't
so
even know what
you
say. So
that's when you finally were like,
I was freaking out a little. I mean, it was at that point I just wanted to get it done, get over with kind of thing. We got that done, and Tom takes me through the veil, which I was like, this is weird too. And I didn't want to say Judith. I didn't. I wanted to say anything else. Takes me through. I made it to heaven. I was like, oh, thank goodness. And then I see heaven is pink and green and gold and calligraphied and ornate. And I was like, ah, can I go back to the other lower heaven? Because it was just white and streamlined and calm compared to that heaven. And then Tom's father starts spewing every single thing he knows about the temple. All the symbology of everything, symbolism of everything. The three flappies on the bonnet represent the priesthood or the Trinity.
Those three would be the Godhead.
The Godhead. And then the flappies on your robe mean the apostles, and the 12 thingies here mean the apostles, and the flippy here and this. And it was just like, why would you think I can absorb this right now?
It was overwhelming.
It was very overwhelming. And I hated buying the garments in the distribution center, because I understand that people can be grossed out by trying things on or making it less sacred because you tried it on, but I got a pair that was too small. And I was uncomfortable the whole time, which I think may have
contributed
to some of my discomfort. But, you know, I didn't know. And I didn't have an opportunity to try them on. I mean, they let you try on bathing suits as long as you keep your underwear on. I would have kept my regular brief underwears on and tried them on, and I don't think that would have destroyed the sacredness that they claim it would have. Tom was late. Tom was very late. And so that added to my anxiety.
This could easily be described as one of those cliche, Satan didn't want this marriage to happen. My dad could not find his temple recommend to save his life. Dad, where is it? She'll be wanting us to be there. She's Mrs. Punctual, and we should go. But I didn't really want to let Satan control me. I didn't really want to, you know, make this day not so fun and such, and so I tried to be calm.
Hadn't you guys just gone through the temple 2 days before?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So did it maybe get left at the desk on that Tuesday? Or?
Possibly.
So did he get a whole new one that day to rush the temple? Or?
I'm not totally sure how it happened exactly. He just said he did some phone calls and he said it'd all be fine.
Okay.
That's all he...
So,
oh,
go and sign the paper and... Like,
well, she was... When you were in the room when you were changing.
Yeah, it was just about...
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I just want to be sure that you talked about it. I thought that was hilarious.
You thought it was hilarious.
I thought it was hilarious.
That I'm bawling my eyes out in the area where you
the
put your dress on. Yeah, in the beautiful...
Temple.
Yeah. And my attendants are just looking at me.
And why are you crying?
Oh, my best friend, she's sewing... Or Katrina, she was getting me into the dress.
Right.
And I'm just... just crying.
Is she going through with it? I don't know.
The attendants thought that I was not wanting to go through with it. And I'm like, if I didn't want to go through with it, I wouldn't have. Seriously. Especially those attendants. Like, if that's how they felt, why didn't they say something? No. Mm. Let her get eternally sealed to some guy she doesn't want to be. Because that's not our place.
I'm sorry. If I were working in the temple, I'd have been like, sweetheart, why are you crying? Do you not want to go through this? Because you don't have to.
Right. So, were you just frustrated by the stuff leading up to that? And it was an overwhelming day?
Yeah. So we get into the sealing room, and there are people in there that I was like, I could have cared less if they had been there.
I, on the other end, was totally happy, actually.
I was happy, but I don't know. Then some guy, some authority walked through, and Tom was like, oh my gosh, this is a sign! Who was it? You remember?
It was Other Holland.
Yeah.
Other Holland. John Holland, right?
Jeffrey,
thanks.
Was he wearing the garb?
No, just a white suit.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so you have all this anxiety, all of this frustration, all of this preparation. You go into the room, it's what, 10 minutes?
We were late starting, too, which really bothered me, because all these people had been waiting, like, at least 30 minutes by the time Tom and I had gotten in, and I mean, I had to get ready. Like, that was what was making me mad, was that Tom was an hour and a half late, and, I mean, I needed that time to get ready. I mean, my dress was slightly complicated to get into. I needed to do my makeup.
Are you allowed to, like, make cell phone calls in the temple?
No.
Make a connection to the world while you're in this holy place. So you had to basically wait outside until you showed up before you could start doing anything.
Well, I was in... Yeah, I mean, I couldn't go in the temple and get started. No, because we had to sign the paperwork first, because we weren't just getting sealed, we were getting married, so all that paperwork had to be done too.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get ready before getting the paperwork done.
Was it a letdown at all? Were you happy with it?
Or
were you just, by that time, were you just in a frame of mind where you're like, okay, now next, we're gonna go do this?
I don't think I rushed through that concept at all, but I mean, I don't remember anything that the guy said, the sealer. More just talk. Something good he's saying right now, like, about us living...
Both of us cried at the altar when we said, yes, we're doing this. And I think, honestly, like, some of that was just... I was happy that, finally, we're married! And it's in God's temple, and I'm with the woman I want to be with.
I mean, it was good. I probably downplay it now, just because it feels like forever ago. And
I think she cried just, like, finally it happened. Like, all this stupidness happened, and now...
Yeah, there was a lot of...
It's done.
Our bishops had threatened to,
like,
not give us recommends to go to the temple, and I was like, well, that's on you. I've done everything you've asked me to at this point, so it's on you if I get married.
So, why didn't they want to give you your temple recommends?
Oh, we were a little bit
sexually active, but with no sex.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I mean, he'd gone up my shirt a couple times, maybe. But, I mean, like, just the fact that he was that strict about it, when, I mean, my invitations had already gone out, and they said the temple in them, kind of hold it over our heads. Well, I don't know if you guys are actually repentant or if you just want to get married. And I'm like, well, that's for you to decide, because I got forgiven by God 2 days ago, because I prayed about it, and he said I was good. So... It's your problem now.
Did you guys have a phase where you were just a happily married Mormon couple, where you were going to church and all of that? As soon as you were married, did you guys start having issues with the church?
It was a happy Mormon couple thing, actually.
Did you never... I thought you, like, never fit into your ward.
We never fit in the ward, for sure. Because we were older when we got married, and we didn't have kids. We were...
With no talks of even having kids, either, actually.
Yeah, and we're just more liberal and political than other people. So we never fit in the ward, but as far as, like, religiously, we were pretty LDS.
We
went to the temple every week, because I was like, that place was weird. I better keep going so that I
The Provo Temple is much more low-key than the Salt Lake Temple, hence it's less intimidating and less scary. And we did monthiversaries during our first year of marriage.
We would visit a different temple once a month. Pretty much when we were first married, we both were unemployed, and it's hard to find work down here, actually. It's pretty difficult, and so we were unemployed for quite some time. We were kind of depressed, and... But we used that to solidify ourselves in our relationship and in our marriage and in the church. I think we were fine our first year as far as religious goes.
Yeah.
But going into our second year, that's when the Packer talk happened.
The Packer, yes.
Did that kick off the departure from the church?
That was definitely a stepping stone, though. Just real quick, Tom, this is kind of how it went. You can stop me if I'm wrong,
no,
but
go for it.
I mean, it went the Packer talk, then it went to studying about homosexuality, which kind of led to studying the church history. That's what I remember it being like.
I think that's actually a very good description of it.
Okay.
It was,
so yeah, we're watching General Conference, which, by the way, I didn't like.
You know, we were watching television. We heard Packer say his infamous words of, "Why would a loving father
do that?
Yeah. And
I almost broke the TV. I was like, that is not
pointed
right.
To the TV, pointed straight to it, like, that's wrong.
That's
wrong.
Because I was under the impression, if it comes at a general conference out of an authority's mouth, crazy me, it's doctrine. I mean, I was not under the impression that apparently something in doctrine has to be voted into doctrine. Like, what's the point of having prophets then? But, yeah, for him to say that, just, I knew that was completely wrong. I knew that was 100% wrong and not true.
And to put a nail in the coffin for that one, when we heard the 14 fundamentals of
that was
prophet?
The same conference, yes, the 14 fundamentals.
He doesn't have to say he's a prophet, and or he doesn't have to say what's
and
from
we
God
like,
and what's not.
Wrong.
And I'm like, how are people? No wonder nobody knows what we believe, because you don't differentiate. It's from God. It's from me.
Yeah, and they say they're not a cult.
So after that, I looked right over at Tom, and I was like, what do you think? I mean, like, and I was pretty hostile.
I was mad. She's hostile, yeah.
I was like, you better not agree with that, or we are done.
And I was just baffled. I was flabbergasted. I was like, he actually said that. How do I reconcile this? And I looked at him, and she was like, totally, like, threatening me. And I was like, I don't agree with him. Trust me.
I put out a thing on Facebook, my angry rant from hell, and so that guy involved. Yeah, so was like, we will have a discussion regarding how the church feels about homosexuality.
Discussion.
So I think the next Sunday after that we went up for dinner, and then he brings us a stack about a foot high of every single thing any church person has said about homosexuality.
Yeah.
And he just hands it to us.
Say what you think. You know,
tell me what you think.
And
we're all like, did you read any of this?
No.
And then he just proceeds to lecture us about one or two talks that he thumbed through.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, this wasn't really a discussion. That
and
was great.
And then he sent an email to him saying, hey, Dad, that wasn't a discussion, and you were very poorly prepared for that.
Mm-hmm.
If we ever do this after this, ever, we will make this a discussion, or we end the exchange instantly, and we're out.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but that was totally absurd, considering our situation and our feelings and where we were. I was like, that was absolutely absurd.
It didn't, make
didn't
anything
help.
Better.
And insulting, really.
So had you guys joined USGA by then?
No. Tom read the whole stack, actually. He read it all.
Yeah.
And he just told me what he read, because I'm lazy and I don't... and it all started to sound the same to me, so I can't stomach...
Yeah.
Constant repetition, especially when I don't agree with it. So he read through it all. We were talking in church, and actually the former president of USGA, he was still the president then, but he's not now, said,
Bastion.
Hey, you guys would be really into this group that I belong to at the BYU. We were like, I don't know, it's
BYU.
He's like, no, trust me. So we took him at his word. Yeah, we went, and it was then it was a small group. It was about 8 to 10 people.
Yeah.
So we made up 12 after that, and it was wonderful. You know, it's just people who understood us.
We could ask questions.
We could ask questions. And I mean, and these kids are, you know, these are gay Mormons, you know, so I'm like, well, if they can reconcile that guy's talking, maybe we can too then. So.
And we did.
We tried to reconcile it, but it was always in the back of my mind, to be honest.
Yeah.
I was just like,
Both of us, really.
You can tell me that it's okay to be gay just as long as you don't do it, but you're also condemning the gays to a life of solitude and loneliness, which is not what Christ is about. It's not what the church is supposedly about.
And we still support
it. Rips up
therapy.
Families. Yeah. And
still support it.
Or it, or it went, in a war a while ago, it used to still force gay men to be married to women, which is awful for the man because he's not where he wants to be. It's awful for the woman because she is pining for someone who will never want her. Then they create children. Then the guy finally can't handle it anymore. And so it breaks up more families than it saves. Mm-hmm. So And yeah. Thank goodness they've stopped suggesting that philosophy. They finally recognized that it's not working. Yeah, we did not agree with it. So then after Tom read that, he's like, well, gosh, you know, if I don't necessarily agree with one of what the apostles say, let's go to the foundation of the church. Let's find out what everything about Joseph Smith.
First, cruise with your family.
Did you go on the cruise after the Packer talk?
Yes.
Before USGA?
After USGA, too.
But yes, before you were like, okay,
before we started
studying.
Setting the foundation. Before okay. we
yeah.
went into the
that's
hardcore.
Right, that's right. That's
yeah.
Okay.
We went on, yeah, we did the cruise, and it was very fun. It was just the last, basically the last day.
Yeah,
her
siblings decided to drink the remainder of their spending money. Yeah, they were pretty schnockered. And so my brother proceeds to talk to Tom and kind of accuse him of being Mormon and against all things homosexual. Go ahead, you probably remember.
Oh, well, he asked questions about, you know, why we're married in the temple, what Mormons believe, and how my relationship with my family is, and all that. And, but you're Mormon. Yeah, I don't agree with this. But you're Mormon. But I don't agree with this either. But you're Mormon. And I finally just let it out and said, then don't call me Mormon. I'm not like that. I'm not one of those people.
So it's not, don't call me Mormon, but if that's what a Mormon is, then just go ahead and don't consider me a Mormon.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I'm not that way then. I'm not a Mormon then, if that's how you view it. And after I said that, I was, that shocked me. I was like, I actually said that. I actually said, don't call me LDS, if that's, I'd never say that. Why did I say that? And that's when I chose to be like, okay, here's the thing. I am so liberal. Both of us are so liberal, we should actually do a reevaluation of ourselves and our involvement in this religion. If we're experiencing this much strife, having these amount of questions and so many of them in this realm, and we're not even getting any answers, let's reaffirm this. Let's study the history, study the foundations, you know, just study all of it down to its core. Mormon stories happened.
In this process of studying, you found
Mormon
stories?
Yes. I found Mormon. I don't remember how I found it, but I found it.
We also went to the Mormon Stories
Circling the Wagons.
Circling of Wagons conference.
Circling the Wagons,
with a lot of the USGA members. I had even gotten up in the testimony meeting and said, you know, I won't be here tomorrow being Sunday, because I'm going to go to church and I'm going to tell them about what we're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm just so happy. I mean, I felt more spiritual at the gay conference than I had ever felt in church. I didn't end up going to church the next day, though. Tom and I had gotten into the habit of not going because we were, like, just not happy going.
Yeah.
But, sorry, continue.
Well, yeah, and during that time, just during that time, that little short window there, that very small window of, like, a month, probably, I exposed myself to imanxmormon.com, xldsscholars.org, I think is what it's called, Mormon Think, every one of those.
And Tom was like,
I studied it
crazy
religiously.
Reading it. Crazy.
Like, every spare moment I had at school, here.
I can attest to that.
Every spare moment I studied every single thing.
And then he'd just tell me what
every
he was
article.
Reading, and I'm like, wow. That's intense, really? Oh my gosh.
So
like,
was it a month and you were done?
No. This was, I mean, from Packard's talk until we left was, I
probably
mean,
a year?
At least roughly a year in the making of
like
just study, learn, kind of readjust our thinking, study more, readjust our thinking some more.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely not a month. I think because we had felt so invested in the church. I mean, Tom's been in it his entire life.
Yeah. I changed my lifestyle
to be a part of it.
And it was a good, you
so
know, I want to be sure.
We wanted
well,
to be sure.
Well, there's eternal implications.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And social really, implications.
Yeah. But if there really are three kingdoms of heaven, you want to know that. I mean, you want to know that.
Well,
yeah.
And how I thought of it, honestly, was I'm like, okay, so even if I stop wearing my garments, God knows that I was endowed. He was there. He saw it. You know, if we resign because we're unhappy with the aspects of the church because they aren't in line with what they were when the church started 130 years ago or whatever it is, you know, God knows that too. God knows that we are studying because we're trying to do the right thing. We're trying to be honest and have integrity.
Mm-hmm.
So,
with no bias.
If the Mormons turn out to be right in the end, I believe and believed then that God would honor the things that we had done in our life, because we still done them. Yeah, the church will say that they've been null and void, but that's not true.
Basically, God would look at your actions and say, you acted in good faith, you were trying to be honest and true and virtuous mm-hmm. and do good to all men.
Exactly. Blah, blah, blah. Like, even an annulment. Even if you have an annulment, you were never married, you still know you were married, you still remember that time, and that time still existed. So, you mean you can erase it from a record, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen.
Okay.
And that's kind of how I felt.
And we had a picture of Jesus just here, actually. I was sitting here, I think, and I did a little personal prayer for myself and asked him, what do you think mm-hmm. about how the church is doing what it's doing, what the leaders are saying, what the members are doing? Like, what is your thought? Do you think it's good? And I felt like I got a confirmation from him that he's not happy with it. Not in any way. He is not happy with it. He wants it to change. And I was like, wow.
So that's you both gnarly. Felt very justified in
both of us. We were like, we prayed about it, just like they told us to do. We were accused of thinking our way out of the church, and we were like, we're trying.
Yeah.
We were called intellectuals as an insult, as
like
a criticism.
Yeah.
I mean, I tried to share as much information that I had with my branch president about the Book of Abraham, about the Book of Mormon, anachronisms, the lack of historical evidence, the problems with the translation process. Translation usually used
just the law of physics.
The law of physics,
as far as like lifting
the golden plates, the weight of them, the dimensions,
being able to run through the forest or move them from place to place, cleaning
the softness of the metal. All those characters would be pressed out after so many years, and all of that just was not making any sense. And we were bringing that to him, and he had no evidence to bring forth to the discussion.
Which made me feel bad. I mean, I didn't want to pull him away from his church, but I wanted him to acknowledge that we had done our homework, that we were not trying to leave the church. The church was, in fact,
not true.
Yes.
I expected to be saved by this leader of God.
Yeah.
I expected him to actually be trained enough and know enough to be able to save us. I expected that. I didn't expect to have enough ammunition to be able to counter every word he said. And plus, I was totally happier now. I was like, you know what? I don't even want to be a member. I'm happier not being a member.
So eventually you just lost all faith altogether.
Oh, especially after 8. We watched that, and I was like, wow, this is underhanded. This is not ethical.
Well, not only ethical,
it's totally
and
wrong.
They used their tax-exempt status to coerce money from Utah into California. Like, one state influencing a completely different state's laws. And
it's just wrong.
There was lots of
this is wrong. That was the first...
On.
Yeah, when we finished watching that, I stood up. I was shaking. Felt terrible. And I was like, I have been lied to, I've been swindled, I have made a fool. I devoted my life to this.
Mm-hmm.
I devoted my whole life, and this is what it does? Are you serious? And then coupled with that, all the stuff that I learned after that about the problems with the Book of Mormon, the problems with the Book of Abraham, all of that, all the problems with the history of the church, of it actually being quote-unquote true, wow. This is just...
Tom came to me with the idea of resigning our memberships. I was a little scared. I was like, couldn't we just not be active? You know, because, I don't know, even though we'd learned all the problems with the church, I was grasping at strings, maybe, because I figured maybe eventually we'd go back. Because it's church, we still sort of-ish believed maybe, kind of, it was true.
It's a dimension of being human that if you have invested in something, you're like,
you don't want to let it go.
You're mentally and emotionally invested in it, and it's hard to reject all of that investment. You know
exactly.
What I mean? So your brain just looks for ways to try to justify that investment and keep it going, so it's not a loss, or so your brain doesn't have to admit to itself that it was wrong, or that kind of thing.
Right.
So
exactly.
I think it's a pretty natural response to go through that
phase.
But you did resign.
We did.
Prior to that, we explained concerns to my parents. Actually, we visited them, and we went for a second go. Like I said, I explained to my dad the conditions of an actual, real discussion. I started teaching information to them, to my parents. Mm-hmm. They had no idea of Michael Quinn, about, you know, those intellectual people of the 90s who were excommunicated, all those thousands of people who were excommunicated for being intellectual. The story of B.H. Roberts. for actually agreeing with the possibility that Joseph Smith probably wrote the Book of Mormon. Mm-hmm. You know, all of that. Like, I was teaching all of this stuff to my parents. They had no idea, and that totally flabbergasted me, too.
Did they claim you were telling lies, or did they accept what you were saying is
true? No, they didn't claim I was telling lies, but they were just like... They were trying to justify. Yeah, they were trying to find an explanation.
And you never know the reasons behind somebody being excommunicated. You only know what they will say. I'm like, because why would they lie? I don't know. Maybe there are people who would lie, but I don't know. I think they're telling the truth.
It's a clever tactic that the church has.
I think
that
it is. Yeah.
It's already a narrative that people are doing bad things and they don't want the world to know, so they're going to tell another story, so they just feed off of that with excommunication.
Right.
They were really excommunicated because they were molesting children, not because the, you know, whatever.
Right.
And that's, that was a problem. I actually, the first person who I told that I didn't really believe the church was true anymore, and I was not active, and I was possibly even thinking of resigning. I sent an email to my sister. It spread from there to my parents.
Not that we resigned.
Just that we weren't. I don't even think they know that we resigned even now. I mean, we engaged in more conversations after that about what our life is like now. Like, my mom was like, what religion do you go to now if you don't go to the LDS religion? And I was like, I don't go to any religion. I don't care about religion anymore. We were raised to believe that this is the one true church.
Yeah.
And if this is not true, then none of them are true, you know?
Yeah.
And I believe that too. And I studied the Bible. That's losing its foundation. That lost its foundation very quickly, actually. You know, we're not religious. And we're happier. And saying that to my family members, even to my mom, who's not a person who actually judges very easily, I don't think. Saying that to her was, like, insulting her. My dad's not very happy, obviously. My brothers, my two other sisters. I'm even judged by them. Well, what do you think that does to mom and dad? That is the end of all arguments in their minds. That's their decision to feel that way. I'm doing what's best for me. I mean, if you want to talk about this, we'll talk about the evidence. We'll talk about the history. We'll talk about da-da-da-da-da. And they never want to talk about it, ever. This was a major decision for... Excuse me, I don't want to cry. This was a major decision for me. For us. And the fact that people don't give that respect. They can insult me and my decisions, but I can't talk about my decisions. That just, you know, I'm the worst person in the world for saying that their church is not true. Really? No. That's not cool. And they wonder why I never want to talk to them anymore. I don't really want to be dramatic like that, but this decision definitely, I think it truly ruined relationships with me and my family. I really do think it did that. And it's not like I wanted that. But I forget the name of the hostess of the... It's a show called The Atheist Experience. The hostess said, talking about her lesbian relationship...
Was this about Chick-fil-A?
Chick-fil-A, yes. She explained that her mother chose to support Chick-fil-A, and...
It would cost her the relationship with her grandson.
And I totally agree with what she said after that. When you act like family, you are family. When you stop acting like family, you're not. It's simple. I don't want it to be that way. That's the worst part about it. I don't want it to be that way, but... I appreciate my family for what they did for me and what they continually try to do for me. I really do. I'm not evil. I'm not evil for my decisions. I don't want to ruin the relationships, but...
Well...
It's difficult.
You're still in your 20s, right?
I'm close to my 30s, actually. Next year I'll be 30.
Well, how long have you been out of the church?
The resignation was...
January, so 9 months.
February was our final letter.
So this is still very new.
Still very new, yeah.
And there's a chance... I mean, I'm not trying to discount the pain that you're feeling.
No, right, you're right.
But there's a chance that down the road, they might come to realize, you know, Tom and Kristen are still married. They haven't done any... They haven't murdered any babies that we know about. You know, they're not embezzling money from the companies they work at that we know of. They're still happy. Maybe they're not horrible people. Like, there's still a chance that could turn around. Nobody can promise that it will. And I understand the pain that comes with... one of the things that has been most frustrating and anger-making for me in my departure out of the church is watching the stories of other people. And in a moment when somebody says, I was raised to be a moral person, I am a moral person, I have this level of integrity that requires me to be this honest about a situation.
Right.
In that moment, when they're showing the most integrity they can in their life because they're making a hugely transitional change, that's the moment their integrity is suddenly under question. You know, every experience that people have had with you up to that point no longer counts. You're automatically suspect.
Right.
And that's, I think, I'm sure it is the hardest part of the getting out of Mormonism for anybody who does it.
Yeah, it's, like I said, I don't mean to be dramatic, but, you know, if that relationship is never actually healed...
Well, you probably feel like you've done your part. And you're open to it being fixed, but there's nothing more... You can't sacrifice your integrity or...
I will not change who I am. I will not ever be religious, ever. But I am a good person. I have morals. Yes, I drink beer and alcohol occasionally, but I'm not a bad person. I'm responsible with my choices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, both of us are. We try to, you know, act responsibly, and we have good friends. We don't serve people just for the sake of some promise of going to the celestial kingdom anymore. We serve people for the sake of feeling that love, feeling that connection, and helping people. We live for ourselves and for others now. Like, really, truly, honestly.
You're good for goodness sake.
We are good for goodness sake.
Okay, so how about your family, Kristen? How have they responded?
My family is thrilled. Seriously, when I told my mother, when we were having the issues with the church, so I told my mom, we're probably going to get excommunicated if we don't resign. And she was like, good! She was very
happy. Hesitation.
No hesitation. No thing. Just bam. But my mother's very not tactful to begin with.
There's no tact.
There's no screen
absolutely
between
no
think and speak. But no, my family has been very happy. They think it's wonderful. She's thrilled to not see our hard-earned money donated to some mega church anymore. I think she believed we were in a cult. Maybe she did research Mormonism and never told me about it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But she was thrilled when we left. My relationship with Tom's family has been strained even more.
You were the convert, and you guys left the church. Is there some sort of... If he hadn't married a convert, maybe he wouldn't have done this?
I don't think that's it at all, because I had demonstrated a great deal of devotion to the church. So I have actually thought about that myself. I have thought, oh, it's my fault that they're going to think that I led their son into apostasy.
It's funny.
But
I was the one who made the decision.
Yeah.
I was the one who made the decision.
I think they view me that way because I have been loud from the beginning, but I don't care.
Both of us were loud, really. Both of us were
I say I don't care, but I do care. I mean, I care that the family is in this huge rift. Mm-hmm. I care. It breaks my heart to see Tom so unhappy, and it breaks my heart to not want to be around these people that I was so excited to get married and get a real Mormon family and get that love and that just togetherness and play games at the table and have Christmas.
So there's definitely a price that's been paid.
Yes. And I mean, and we've lost a lot of friendships, but I think they were topical friendships to begin with. They were just friends because we all went to the same church. Oh, we don't go to the same church? Well, we're not friends anymore.
Yeah.
Versus
friends,
the people that
friends
are still friends with us, still talk to us. Those are people that like us. For us.
For us,
And I love them even more because they can see past ridiculousness.
See us as people and not as a statistic.
Yeah. So... Okay. So there have been some pretty bad rough patches, but, you know, press on, and things are better. It does get better.
Yeah, it really does. And it's, I mean, you will get conversations like, this was previous to me actually writing the letter of resignation, but my brother called me, and he asked me about my decision. He's like, are you sure about, you know, all that stuff? And he specifically said, I will fight for you. I promise to fight for you. And I was like, oh, thanks, that's very nice. He's like, no, I mean, I will fight for you. Like, he'll fight for my salvation.
Like, he'll go before God and say he's a good guy, and then he left the church?
Not really, no. He'll fight for me to keep me in the church.
Oh, he'll argue with you to keep you in the church.
Yeah. That's really what...
Which never happened.
It never happened. Actually. He never called me. We didn't talk about it since.
Yeah. That's why I always think it's funny when you bring that up. Because I'm like, he never really talked about it. Because I kind of always thought it was what you thought.
And I'm not judging him.
Pleading your case before God.
I'm not judging him. I'm not condemning him.
Well, it's just, what can he say to you? Right. You know the reality that, I mean, there's all this talk in the church about, like, they teach that you're supposed to go after the lost sheep, but nobody ever does. Well, that's because they can't. Realistically, they know that it's treading in dangerous territory because they're going to find out the truth, and then they're going to be a lost sheep. Mm-hmm. There is no saving. So tell me what your beliefs are now.
Okay. I am a full-fledged atheist, really, except I like the idea of an afterlife. And I want an afterlife to exist, but...
That doesn't mean there is one.
That does not mean there is one. When I hear about people having a label on atheism, they're like, oh, you don't believe in anything. I'm like, well, I don't really believe that God exists. No, I don't really believe that. If you can show evidence or even logic to even support the idea of a God existing, I will totally consider it and we will discuss or even argue it. But I don't see the logic, I don't see the evidence, I don't see the reason for believing God exists. I don't see why that's such a necessity. My life goals are not hinging on the existence of a God, or even on the possibility of an afterlife. Since that's not a guarantee, I am trying to live my life with no regrets. And if the afterlife exists and I'm proving wrong, yay! Mm-hmm. You know, but simultaneously, if this is all we have, let's make the most of it now. Don't wait. Do it now.
Okay.
But, yeah.
How about you?
I am more of a optimistic atheist, I guess. I kind of, you remember The Sims, how you can be a person, you can control these people, or you can... let them do whatever. That's kind of what I think of God. It sounds kind of weird, but, you know, they still haven't proved that God does or does not exist. I don't know. I see a lot of atheism, and I can agree with a lot of atheism. I just choose to believe that God is kind of like a scientific laboratory guy, and he created the universe, he created Earth, and he sits back and watches. Because there's definitely no... I do not see the hand of God in people's lives. The whole tale of my lost keys or that is baloney compared to people in India or Africa who are dying of AIDS, and there's ways to resolve that, and there's no water or polluted water or no food. And when the hand of God would obviously make sense to go there instead of find some jackwad's lost keys.
Right.
Seriously, like, the tender mercies of God thing is a bunch of baloney. They invented is probably the wrong word, but they used that to make these middle class white Americans or black or whatever, you know, feel special. But don't talk about the horrible things that are going on in the world. I don't see the hand of God in anybody's life directly. If God exists, I believe he is kind of like a laboratory guy and is watching and observing how mankind treats one another.
But you're a deist.
I don't want to label myself that either. That's kind of why I invented my own label, my optimistic atheism, because I like the idea of a God. And if God exists, this is kind of what I imagine he is. Or she is, or it is just that it created this existence for creatures and people, and is watching them and see how they treat each other, see how mankind treats animals, see how mankind treats other mankind, and doesn't sit and just watches and observes, and maybe jots down some notes. Mm-hmm. As far as heaven is concerned, I am totally not sure what heaven would be like. I hope it's not just a bunch of clouds, like a lot of
harps
and halos and wings. I hope it's not like that. I kind of hope heaven is like your ideal life or your ideal opportunities if you'd had unlimited resources. That's why I label myself as an optimistic atheist.
Okay.
Kristen and I, we're happy. We're not religious.
Thanks for the interview. As always, I guess, you can go leave comments, continue this conversation at mormonexpression.com/voices.
Not been easy, but I don't need you love.
Directing, producing, and editing was done by Heather C., and the theme music was provided by McCall Erickson. Thank you for listening. Mormon Expression Voices is a production of the Whitefields Educational Foundation. Find us on the web at whitefieldseducational.org. The Mormon Expression and Mormon Expression Voices podcasts, as well as other educational initiatives, are made possible by your generous donations. Please consider a subscription today.